We begin with Lawrence O'Donnell. He's been a student of American politics for most of his life, a former senior advisor to New York Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan, the chief of staff to two Senate committees, and also an Emmy Award-winning executive producer and writer for The West Wing, and host of MSNBC's The Last Word. And Lawrence O'Donnell is back with his paperback, Playing with Fire, a best-selling book a few months ago, The 1968 Election and the Transformation of American Politics. An election like no other, Lawrence O'Donnell, and a year like no other. And for those of us who think that 2018, 50 years later, is an amazing year, 1968 was certainly one that has been not surpassed in American history.
No, it was a very dark time, and it was because of the Vietnam War. And we do not have a war raging like that now. We do have troops at risk, and we have had troops at risk for basically the 21st century, starting after 9/11 in 2001. But just to put it in perspective, in the year 1968 alone, over 16,000 American soldiers were killed in Vietnam. So that's over 16,000 American families standing and crying at military funerals in 1968, as my family was when we buried my cousin Johnny, who was a West Point graduate, who was killed in around his 90th day of service in Vietnam that year. We are not experiencing that at that scale in this country. And virtually every man in the country, when they reached age 18, was exposed to the possibility of being drafted and sent to Vietnam, most of them sent against their will to a war that most of them did not support. That draft is gone. That risk is gone. It's not felt. And in 1968, everyone felt it. If you didn't have a draft card in your pocket, then your older brother did, or your boyfriend did, or your cousin did, or your uncle did, or your neighbor did. Everyone felt it. Everyone felt this risk, this literally life and death risk that we were all living with because of this government policy. And that's why the 1968 election was about life and death, and it was about the life and death of people we knew, people we were related to. It was very real and immediate, and that's a sensation that has disappeared from our culture, both with the all-volunteer army, which segregates military service into a tiny, tiny sector of our population and isolates it, so that the people who have nothing to do with the military in any way and have no relatives in the military, like the Trump family, live in a complete oblivious world to what military life is and what's happening with our soldiers who do face combat situations in the 21st century. And so the kind of oppressive feeling that opponents of the Trump administration can feel now is actually not as powerful as the oppressive feeling that the opponents of the Johnson administration and then the Nixon administration who were conducting the Vietnam War felt at that time.
You were in high school, and for those of us who were alive in 1968, our lives forevermore were shaped, whether we acknowledge it or not, by the events of that year and perhaps the discussions of that year. And we have a president, you mentioned him, who took six draft deferments. But that was not an issue in the 2016 campaign. Have we gotten past the fact that most men of that generation who were eligible to fight in the United States did everything they could to stay out of harm's way?
Well, everyone does. I mean, the truth of the matter is that most men and most people who are eligible and available to it do not participate in American wars, and that was even true in World War II. I mean, the number of people who actually saw combat in World War II was a minority of men, and you could always see that after World War II with people like my father, who was in the Army but never left the United States, never saw action. He lived in awe of all those soldiers that he knew, including his brother and his brothers-in-law, who did see action in World War II. And so most men never come close to it, and most men don't want to come close to it. Most people now, since it's women are also available to it, do not ever consider getting near our war machinery and being part of our war machinery. So, but the fact that Donald Trump evaded the draft, I don't think was ignored in the campaign. It became very clear in the campaign. And there were people who voted against him because of that. At the same time, there were other people who didn't like that part of his resume, but still voted for him. Veterans and other military personnel who might think that part of his resume bothered them, but they agreed with him enough on other issues that they voted for him. So I don't think it was a non-factor. I think it was part of painting the character of who Donald Trump actually is. And look, evading the Vietnam War and using phony doctor's notes to do it was something that I was fully supportive of at the time when I was in high school. And everyone had friends who tried to do that. They usually failed. Their phony doctor's excuses usually did not work because they would get a physical but administered to them by the military anyway, and they'd find that, you know, this thing you're claiming isn't true. But there were all sorts of schemes people were trying to come up with to get out of that war. And there was absolutely nothing wrong with that, in my view, certainly nothing morally wrong with that. But having done that, you must live the rest of your life in an honest relationship to that. And Donald Trump doesn't. Donald Trump pretends that he is a champion of the military when no one named Trump has ever served in the American military, ever. Not Donald Trump's father, not anyone, anyone he's related to. They have no connection to it whatsoever. And so Donald Trump then tries to live a lie about his affection for and devotion to the American military, when in the Trump family, the American military is a joke that you stay away from.
And this president ridiculed John McCain, which seems unseemly, even if Trump were a decorated veteran. But the fact that he did not serve and McCain did and spent 5.5 years in captivity in a horrible place, some thought that would disqualify him. It was early in the campaign, but he rolled merrily along.
Yeah, I did. I was one of the people who was wrong about that. I just thought, okay, this is the end. And it was very early. It was the first couple of weeks, and it just showed that the amateur doesn't understand anything about being in politics and doesn't understand anything about presidential campaigning. This will be the end for Donald Trump. At that time, Rupert Murdoch, owner of the New York Post and of Fox News, publicly said, because of the McCain statement, that Donald Trump should drop out and stop embarrassing himself and his family. So there was a very widespread feeling that that was an unsurvivable comment, and it turns out we were wrong. It turns out that the issues that Donald Trump was, pushing and was activated on were powerful enough among the people who agreed with him that they were willing to ignore comments like that.
We're visiting with Lawrence O'Donnell, author of Playing with Fire, the 1968 Election and the Transformation of American Politics. And back in 1968, it was a given that anybody who ran for president at that time would have been a military veteran. Today, not the case at all. In fact, in recent vintage, military veterans have not done as well as those who were running against them in the skirmishes of major parties in the race for the White House in 1992. Bill Clinton beat a decorated war veteran in George Bush. In 96, Clinton did the same when he defeated Bob Dole. In 2000, Vietnam veteran Albert Gore lost to George Bush, who took refuge in the Texas and Alabama National Guard during Vietnam. In 2004, George Bush again defeated a decorated war veteran in John Kerry. In 2008, it was Barack Obama defeating a decorated war veteran in John McCain. And in 2012, Barack Obama beat a draft dodger in Mitt Romney. And in 2016, a draft dodger, Donald Trump, defeated Hillary Clinton, who was not eligible to serve. But nonetheless, it was a requirement at one point in our history to have the commander-in-chief have some military service, no longer the case. 1968 was a year like no other, as we've said with Lawrence O'Donnell, and the popular vote that year was razor tight, with Hubert Humphrey barely losing in the overall vote to one Richard Nixon. The overall vote was less than 600,000 votes between those two men, and Hubert Humphrey of LSU got 42.7% of the votes, and Richard Nixon 43.4%. George Wallace carried five southern states, including Louisiana. Now, in the book that you write, Playing with Fire, the 1968 Election and Transformation of American Politics, we have a cadre of major characters seen like no other in that year, with Nixon and Humphrey and Wallace and Johnson and Ronald Reagan and Nelson Rockefeller, George Romney, Bobby Kennedy, and Martin Luther King assassinated. It was a time in which everybody seems to converge on the stage, and one man who perhaps has not gotten his due that you write about is Eugene McCarthy.
Gene McCarthy started it all. He changed what our politics was in 1968 when he made the decision that no one before him had ever made, which is he decided to run against his own incumbent president's reelection. A Democrat, Democratic senator, deciding, I'm going to run against the Democratic president who is seeking reelection. This was a revolutionary thought, and Gene McCarthy did it because he wanted to put the Vietnam War on the ballot. Gene McCarthy had become anti-war. Like all senators except for one, Gene McCarthy had supported the Vietnam War at its origins and right through its maturity. But by 1967, he was turning against it very sharply. And by 1968, he was fully against it. And he wanted to put the Vietnam War on the ballot. He wanted to give anti-war voters a way to make a statement to Lyndon Johnson, who Gene McCarthy expected to be reelected. But he wanted Johnson to see this is how strong the anti-war support is. It turned out the anti-war support was even stronger than Gene McCarthy or Lyndon Johnson imagined, and Gene McCarthy did very well in the New Hampshire primary, and within that same week of Gene McCarthy doing so well in New Hampshire, Bobby Kennedy then jumped in the race. The McCarthy result was enough to encourage Bobby Kennedy to finally jump in the race. What I didn't know at the time as a high school kid was that Bobby Kennedy had been thinking about running against Lyndon Johnson long before Gene McCarthy did, but Bobby went back and forth between thinking about it and rejecting it, and then thinking about it again and rejecting it. But Gene McCarthy really is the force that started everything that was important in the dynamics of 1968, because eventually Lyndon Johnson drops out of the race. The most powerful, wily politician who ever occupied the presidency gives up. The toughest politician, we thought, who ever occupied the presidency gives up, drops out in his own reelection because of the forces unleashed by Gene McCarthy and Gene McCarthy's decision to run against LBJ. And LBJ dropping out ends up, in the end, leaving the nomination to his then vice president, Hubert Humphrey, who was not strong enough a candidate to stop Richard Nixon, although in the end, the momentum was with Hubert Humphrey, and he came. He finished less than one percentage point behind Richard Nixon, and the Humphrey world always believed if you had given us one more day of campaigning, the momentum would have carried us. But everything about that campaign turned on the decision Gene McCarthy made to challenge the Democratic president.
Lastly, Lawrence, I think 1968 proves that in the cases of Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy and many through history, that advocating peace often ends with these men giving their lives for their cause.
Yeah, either one of those incidents would have been the biggest thing in any other presidential campaign. A presidential candidate assassinated on the night of his greatest victory. Bobby Kennedy had just won the California primary. He seemed well positioned to go on from there to get the nomination, and he's assassinated before he leaves the hotel ballroom where he claimed victory. That happened just weeks after Martin Luther King had been assassinated. Either one of those things would have been the biggest thing in any other year that they happened. The fact that they happened literally within weeks of each other is emotionally stunning. And again, I just offer that as one of the differences between 1968 and now, and one of the examples of how 1968 was worse, much worse than now. I don't even want to get into what the comparable examples of that kind of action would be if we had to live through things like that this year.
It's appropriate to remember 50 years ago, and Lawrence O'Donnell does it in great depth in Playing with Fire, the 1968 election and the transformation of American politics. And you can watch him every weekday, every weeknight, 9 o'clock in Louisiana on The Last Word. Thank you, Lawrence O'Donnell.
Thank you very much.